almost the only unity of this France over which the king exercised a nominal authority, lay in the common resolution of its great provinces to resist incorporation in any empire dominated either by a German ruler or by the Pope. Apart from the simple organization dictated by that common will, France was a mosaic of practically independent nobles. It was an era of castle building and fortification, and what was called private war throughout all Europe. The state of Rome in the 10th century is almost indescribable. The decay of the empire of Charlemagne left the Pope without a protector, threatened by Byzantium and the Saracens who had taken Sicily, and face to face with the unruly nobles of Rome. Among the most powerful of these were two women, Theodora and Marozia, mother and daughter, who in succession held the castle of St. Angelo, which Theophylact, the patrician husband of Theodora, had seized with most of the temporal power of the Pope. These two women were as bold, unscrupulous, and dissolute as any male prince of the time could have been, and they're abused by historians as though they were 10 times worse. Marozia seized and imprisoned Pope John X in 928, who speedily died under her care. She subsequently made her illegitimate son Pope under the title of John XI. After him, her grandson, John XII, filled the chair of St. Peter. Gibbon's account of the manners and morals of John XII takes refuge at last beneath a veil of Latin footnotes. This pope, John XII, was finally degraded by the new German Emperor Otto, who came over the Alps and down into Italy to be crowned in 962. This new line of Saxon emperors, which thus comes into prominence, sprang from a certain Henry the Fowler, who was elected King of Germany by an assembly of German nobles, princes, and prelates in 919. In 936 he was succeeded as king by his son Otto I, surnamed the Great, who was also elected to be his successor at Aix-la-Chapelle, and who finally descended upon Rome at the invitation of John XII to be crowned emperor in 962. His subsequent degradation of John was forced upon him by that pope's treachery. With his assumption of the imperial dignity, Otto I didn't so much overcome Rome as restore the ancient tussle of pope and emperor for ascendancy to something like decency and dignity again. Otto I was followed by Otto II, 973-983, and he again by a third Otto, 983-1002. The struggle between the emperor and the pope for ascendancy over the Holy Roman Empire plays a large part in the history of the early Middle Ages, and we shall have presently to sketch its chief phases. Though the church never sank quite to the level of John XII again, nevertheless the story fluctuates through phases of great violence, confusion, and intrigue. Yet the outer history of Christendom isn't the whole history of Christendom. That the Lateran was as cunning, foolish, and criminal as most other contemporary courts has to be recorded, but if we're to keep due proportions in this history, it mustn't be unduly emphasized. We must remember that through all those ages, leaving profound consequences but leaving no conspicuous records upon the historian's page, countless men and women were touched by that spirit of Jesus, which still lived and lives still at the core of Christianity, that they led lives that were on the whole gracious and helpful, and that they did unselfish and devoted deeds. Through those ages, such lives cleared the air and made a better world possible, just as in the Muslim world the spirit of Islam, generation by generation, produced its crop of courage, integrity, and kindliness. 8. While the Holy Roman Empire and the kingdoms of France and England were thus appearing amidst the extreme political fragmentation of the civilization of Western Europe, both that civilization and the Byzantine Empire were being subjected to a threefold attack. From the Saracen powers, from the Northmen, and more slowly developed and most formidable of all from a new westward thrust of the Turkish peoples through South Russia, and also by way of Armenia and the Empire of Baghdad from Central Asia. After the overthrow of the Umayyads by the Abbasid dynasty, the strength of the Saracenic impulse against Europe diminished. Islam was no longer united. Spain was under a separate Umayyad caliph. North Africa, though nominally a subject to the Abbasids, was really independent. And presently, in 969, Egypt became a separate power with a Shiite caliph of its own, a pretender claiming descent from Ali and Fatima, the Fatimite caliphate. These Egyptian Fatimites, the Green Flag Muslims, were fanatics in comparison with the Abbasids and did much to embitter the genial relations of Islam and Christianity. They took Jerusalem and interfered with the Christian access to the Holy Sepulchre. On the other side of the shrunken Abbasid domain, there was also a Shiite kingdom in Persia. The chief Saracen conquest in the 9th century was Sicily, but this wasn't overrun in the grand old style in a year or so, but subjugated tediously through a long century and with many setbacks. The Spanish Saracens disputed in Sicily with the Saracens from Africa. In Spain, the Saracens were giving ground before a renascent Christian effort. Nevertheless, the Byzantine Empire and Western Christendom were still so weak upon the Mediterranean Sea that the Saracen raiders and pirates from North Africa were able to raid almost unchallenged in South Italy and the Greek islands. But now a new force was appearing in the Mediterranean. We've already remarked that the Roman Empire never extended itself to the shores of the Baltic Sea, nor had ever the vigour to push itself into Denmark. The Nordic Aryan peoples of these neglected regions learnt much from the empire that was unable to subdue them. As we've already noted, they developed the art of shipbuilding and became bold seamen. They spread across the North Sea to the west and across the Baltic and up the Russian rivers into the very heart of what is now Russia. One of their earliest settlements in Russia was Novgorod the Great. There's the same trouble and confusion for the student of history with these northern tribes as there is with the Scythians of classical times and with the Hunnish Turkish peoples of Eastern and Central Asia. They appear under a great variety of names. They change and intermingle. In the case of Britain, for example, the Angles, the Saxons, and Jutes conquered most of what's now England in the 5th and 6th centuries. The Danes, a second wave of practically the same people, followed in the 8th and 9th. And in 1016, a Danish king, Canute the Great, reigned in England, and not only over England, but over Denmark and Norway. His subjects sailed to Iceland, Greenland, and perhaps to the American continent. For a time, under Canute and his sons, it seemed possible that a great confederation of the Northmen might have established itself. Then in 1066, a third wave of the same people flowed over England from the Norman state in France, where the Northmen had been settled since the days of Rolf the Ganger in 912, and where they had learnt to speak French. William, Duke of Normandy, became the William the Conqueror, 1066 of English history. Practically, from the standpoint of universal history, all these people were the same people, waves of one Nordic stock. These waves weren't only flowing westward, but eastward. Already we have mentioned a very interesting earlier movement of the same peoples under the name of Goths, from the Baltic to the Black Sea. We've traced the splitting of these Goths into the Ostrogoths and the Visigoths, and the adventurous wanderings that ended at last in the Ostrogoth kingdom in Italy and the Visigoth states in Spain. In the 9th century, a second movement of the Northmen across Russia was going on at the same time that their establishments in England and their dukedom of Normandy were coming into existence. The the population of South Scotland, England, East Ireland, Flanders, Normandy, and the Russias have more elements in common than we're accustomed to recognize. All are fundamentally Gothic and Nordic peoples. Even in their weights and measures, the kinship of Russian and English is to be noted. Both have the Norse inch and foot, and many early Norman churches in England are built on a scale that shows the use of the sain, 7 foot, and quarter sain, a Norse measure still used in Russia. These Russian Norsemen travelled in the summertime, using the river routes that abounded in Russia. They carried their ships by portages from the northward running rivers to those flowing southward. They appeared as pirates, raiders, and traders, both upon the Caspian and the Black Sea.